Welcome back to the Pastor's Pre-Game Podcast, where you usually hear the Christ Fellowship preaching team getting ready for Sunday morning. But this week, in celebration of the holidays, we're giving you a special bonus episode. Members of the Christ Fellowship worship team are here to give you a behind-the-scenes glimpse into the making of their original Christmas song, Emmanuel Victorious. All right, guys, we are here with a special edition of the Pastor's Pre-Game Podcast because there are no preaching pastors in this room. Instead of giving you guys a little behind the scenes on the sermons, I'm going to give you a little behind the scenes on an original song that we've been singing at Christ Fellowship here during the Christmas season called Emmanuel Victorious. So I'm here with Crystal Yates and Will Yates and Jason Hibden and Belinda Soto. And so, guys, this is exciting. This is a great song. It's an original song that you guys put together. So we just want to know a little bit about how that process happened. So, Crystal, let's start with you. Give us a little background on the original inspiration for this song.
Well, I think I really love Christmas music. I love the Christmas season. I love everything about it. I love writing Christmas songs. And sometimes I feel like when we get into traditional Christmas music, we don't get to dive deep into worship. You know, some of the songs are a little bit more kind of standard. And
you've heard them a million times.
Yeah. And so I love writing worship. And so I love writing Christmas. So worship and Christmas. So this was kind of the steam behind the engine of this song, was just the heart to write something for Christmas for both our English and Spanish language service that we could worship with at Christmas time. So that was kind of the genesis of it all.
Yeah. So Belinda, talk a little bit about why it's important that to write a song in both English and Spanish at the same time. Why does that matter?
Yeah. Well, you know, here at Christ Fellowship, we are one church, two languages. That's the model. We're not an English congregation solely or just a Spanish congregation that are to these two separate entities trying to do worship maybe at the same time. Like, we truly live out the value of being mindful that, hey, we have people who worship in different languages. You know, the predominant two languages here are English and Spanish. And so it's important that we bridge the gaps between those two languages in how we do church, being one church, two languages. You know, it's doing everything together. It's worshiping together. It's living life together. It is, you know, our kids just doing Promised Land together. It's our students doing students together. So it is a high value for us, and it's very unique to Christ Fellowship.
It is unique. It is unique. And it's interesting to write the song with both languages in mind, right? It's not like something that was written in English and then someone later down the road translated it into Spanish. I'm sure that changes the dynamic a little bit.
Well, that's something that I get to hear from, you know, people that sing and lead in Spanish, is that some of the English translations don't translate quite as well.
Right.
So that's where Jason came in. I mean, he's bilingual. And so he came in to be part of that writing. And I kind of brought, you know, would you want to do this? And he said, yes, thank God. and so it was writing it together was really important for this church specifically, because we do have such a robust, amazing, alive Spanish language service.
Yeah.
And
they rock it over there.
Yes, they do. They're amazing.
If you've never walked by or just gone in for the worship portion, if you're an English speaker and you've never done a little Spanish worship, it's amazing.
You need to stop by. I mean,
yes, for sure.
And so that was really important. And so when he said yes, I gathered some other friends of ours, another writer that lives in Nashville, Corey Voss, and then one that lives in Sioux Falls named Jordan Merritt. And I gathered them with me and Jason and Belinda, and we sat down writing the song both in English and Spanish, which is awesome.
Okay, so to those of us who are not musically inclined, writing a song sounds like magic. Like, it really does. Like, that it sounds. But so just give us a little glimpse. How does that come about? How does that work? What can you have any kind of fun stories from the writing of it?
I mean, Jason, I don't know. What do you think? Did you think it was magical?
Yo no pensaba que fuera tanto más. Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. We're in English. No, Well, magical is not the word I would use for any songwriting.
Actually, I don't know that I've ever heard Jason say the word magical.
Yeah, well, the process may not feel magical, but to us on the outside, it seems like it was like, you know.
Only when I watched The Little Mermaid.
there it is.
No, I think to me, writing a song is work. You know, yeah. It may seem magical on the other side, which is awesome, but it's work. You put thought into it and you work the details. What we're doing it simultaneously. I've translated songs for years, even before it was popular, because there was once upon a time when Hillsong and Bethel mm-hmm. and Elevation did not translate all of their own songs. They just mm-hmm. put them out in English, and then, you know, if we wanted to sing them, we had to translate them in Spanish. And that doesn't always work out.
Right.
Especially the best written songs, when they're very poetic, they're very hard to translate because they were so eloquently thought out mm-hmm. in one language that you can't just go and translate.
Some of the metaphors don't quite work in another language. Yeah.
And so you try to, I've gone through this process of what the rule is to translate, you know, what am I after? And you start out with, well, I got to keep the message the same. Then you're like, yeah, but that doesn't really work. So I got to keep the metering the same. And then you're like, well, that doesn't really kind of work. And so what I've ended up with is that when you translate a song, it needs to sound like, when it's in Spanish, once it's, you know, gone from English to Spanish, it needs to sound like it was written in Spanish originally. Yeah. That way it just flows off the tongue and you're not going, I mean, there are so many songs I can go, oh, that's a translated song, without ever having heard it in a different language, because it just doesn't really work. Awkward. Like, nobody would have ever written it that way. Mm-hmm. So writing it simultaneously works out better, because you can go, you know, when there's a phrase that's like, hey guys, this phrase is just not working in Spanish. Like, there's no way I can say that. And so then they start thinking, oh, well, how else can we say the same message in a different way in English that would still work? Or sometimes they're like, no, I really want to keep that phrase. So I dig a little deeper. What does that phrase exactly mean to you? And how can you say it in three other different ways that might trigger a thought in Spanish for me to go, oh, I can use this version of that thought rather than using this version of that thought. And so you work it like that. And I think at the end, you end up with a product that sounds like it was written in Spanish mm-hmm. rather than translated. What? Because it was written in Spanish.
Yeah, because you guys, it's collaborative, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that was really, really special. And getting to make those kind of decisions with Jason, you know, sitting there as he's translating. I mean, he was having to work pretty fast. The guys we were writing with were working fast, and he was like breaking a sweat over there. He was like, hold on,
like,
you guys. Slow down a little bit here.
I cannot think that fast.
So did y'all write the melody and the words at the same time? Kind of.
I came with a melody idea for the chorus, and uh-huh. that was pretty much what I came with was, when you hear the chorus, that melody was something that was kind of rolling around in my heart for a few days. And I just brought that to the table. And then once they get in there and start playing chords and start making phrases fit, deciding what they want to say, those things kind of get altered in that process and they change a little bit. But that was the beautiful thing about, you know, writing with a Spanish, like, he's a translator by all.
Right. He's bilingual.
He's bilingual. And we could make a decision in that room, like, hey, is it okay if this means this in Spanish mm-hmm. instead of that,
right.
you know? And that was awesome.
That's so cool. So you guys wrote the song, you got it all put together, and then talk about the next process. You guys got in a van. Yeah. I saw pictures.
Yeah.
And Melinda, how was the trip to Nashville?
Well, you kind of never know how those things are going to roll out, you know?
How many of us went?
There were, 8 of us?
It was 12.
12 of us
in a van,
in a 10 passenger van,
and we won't talk
with
about
suitcases.
Who took the most bathroom breaks on the
that's right,
we don't need to talk about that at all.
Yeah, like I said, you never really know how those things are gonna go. You know, I don't think we've ever spent
this is also our first trip out like post COVID, like, because we've been we had
this
just
was
been
last
shut
year, right? We should say, so this was like end of 2020.
We did all the songwriting via Zoom, right?
Yes.
And so we were kind of still in our houses. By the time we went to Nashville, we had just been kind of let out. So so honestly,
like,
we stopped at like every single gas station between here and Nashville to test out, you know, our immunity to COVID,
absolutely,
I guess, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, that's correct.
So you got to the studio, and what's that like?
Well, back up just a little bit.
Okay, sure.
So what happened is, we once we had written the song, we all loved it. And I shared it with Dennis, who was our executive pastor at the time. And he was like, yeah, this is great. Just let me know what we need to do next. And so right about the time that Jason and I were starting to kind of plan out the tactical things, okay, we need to record the drums here and we do this here and we're going to cut this and you'll do this and I'll do this. Dennis got a call from a friend of his who said that he had gotten a very coveted spot at the Recording Academy at Blackbird Studios in Nashville.
Wow.
So as a parenthesis here, Blackbird Studios is one of the best studios in the world.
I mean, I've even heard of it.
Exactly.
I know nothing.
Yeah, so John McBride, Martina McBride's husband, he was Garth Brooks' sound guy for years and years. He started it way back when. Just their microphone collection is worth something like $2 million. And
but there's just drool coming down your face
the entire time.
But the thing is, because it's so elite and so high end, you know, one doesn't just call up Blackbird and say, I'd like to book
a
session.
Spot. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to book a session here. So you have to know someone who's on the inside, or you have to have a pre-established relationship. And so when we found out that Dennis's friend, one of the projects for his final assignments was to record a band with an original song, which just happened to be us. And not only could we get time at Blackbird Studios, which is unheard of, we were actually going to be able to record there for free. It wasn't going to cost us anything, which is unreal. Because if you ever do get a session at Blackbird, it's extraordinarily expensive. Crystal and I have worked on other people's sessions at Blackbird before. And some of those sheets, the spreadsheets at the end of the day, you're like, wow. So the opportunity just to walk through the doors was huge.
I don't know, guys. Sounds like God was involved in this somehow.
Exactly. Yeah. And we couldn't have planned that. I mean, it just so happens that this guy, all the things just lined up there. So that kind of started us going, all right, well, let's get the right people together and the right team together. So we got, a great bunch of guys with us all the way to Nashville, like Blen and Jason said, every gas station along the way to test our herd immunity. Jumping over a few steps real quick, I love the final product that we have because it is a result of the cumulative effort of a lot of really, really good people working together for a common goal. And that's the kind of stuff that really melts my butter.
Yeah.
So it was really incredible. I mean, just walking into a place like Blackbird, I mean, the organ that we used on this song is Steppenwolf's old organ, which was the organ they used on Born to Be Wild. I mean, it's like literal music history right there. And there's just, it was like Jason said, we were all just, you know, like a dog outside of a butcher shop just walking through there. So the sessions went really great. We spent a whole long night recording the band and the next day recording the vocals. And that was the other thing. We had a very limited amount of time that we could use the studio.
Very limited.
So it was incredibly stressful. So both Jason and Crystal nailed their vocals out of the park. And then from and Belinda too. Belinda had, this is props to her, she had the toughest job was to harmonize to like four different people all different times in like a super short window. So I was really impressed with that. And it's very, very tough to do that kind of on the spot. So once we recorded, that's part of what you call harvesting, where you've recorded a lot of stuff. Now we have to come back and make sense of everything.
Right.
And so that's where Jason really came in and started to, you know, look through, okay, what did we actually record? What do we have? And how can we start to craft this into sort of the final product?
We went from Blackbird Studios to Jason Home Studios. with the next door neighbor getting onto us for parking in front of his house.
That's right. Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, that's right.
I remember that story.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen so many cables run through one house.
Yeah.
At one time.
Was just like black spaghetti all through Jason's living room. One of the things too that really, this is real behind the scenes, but one of mine and Jason's favorite albums in the last 10 years is Shane and Shane's Psalms album.
Yes.
And the guy who did the final mix on that is a guy named Jared Fox. And we were talking one day, I was like, man, wouldn't it be cool if we got Jared Fox in to do the mix? And well, we can't get in touch with him at all. So I pulled a favor and I actually wound up asking one of the Shanes for Jared's info and thinking he would be like, no, that's my mix engineer. And he was like, sure, dude, here you go. And turns out Jared was available, and he wound up doing the final mix for both the English and the Spanish version.
See, so that's, people have no idea.
No.
And, I mean, how cool this all was.
Yeah,
that's why we're doing this.
Exactly.
I want you guys to know how cool this is.
Available and affordable, because that's, you know.
That's the other thing. Yeah.
Yes.
So Jared put his secret sauce on it, and I think just very few, if any, mix revisions. It was maybe like three or four total. He was on the 5-yard line for sure. And then from there, it's just a matter of sharing it with, this is the other thing too. we were at this point, it's like, so COVID delays affected everybody.
Of course, yes.
So we got into the studio, I think it was like October maybe of last year, mm-hmm. something like that. And so then, you know,
you want this for Christmas.
Right. And then mix engineer delays and all that kind of stuff. So it was to the wire getting this thing ready to go. So it was a lot of stress at the last minute trying to make.
I remember because we lost a couple, because we had to come back and record some stuff that we didn't get a chance to record. Mm-hmm. You know, like we recorded all the main stuff in Nashville, but then you got like background vocals and then your extra keyboards and extra guitars and stuff that you didn't get a chance to do. Because if we started dissecting a song, it probably has like 18 electric guitars on it and 18 keyboards and, you know, 20,000 vocals that, mm-hmm. that you don't necessarily hear it like that. But, mm-hmm. And so while we're doing all this stuff, I think one of our vocalists got delayed because she was sick. If I'm not, Sick at one point, and so we had to delay. And then we were right up at the wire, and I don't exactly know what I did, but I lost all the files that we had recorded. And somehow,
that's right.
Yeah, because like we were supposed to be turning it in to Jared to mix, and I was like, dude, Will, don't kill me. I've lost everything that we just recorded at the house.
So Will got to practice his forgiveness and long-suffering.
Why I didn't remember that is because
you had blocked it out.
Exactly. I blocked it out of my memory. That's right.
Trauma.
Yeah. So I think I ended up staying up like till 3 a.m. reconstructing all of the files from pieces that I was grabbing from the hard drive. And I think we actually did lose a couple of things permanently, because after I heard it, the final product back, I was like, I thought we did that vocal differently, but
oh well, it got done right at that point. It's a race to the finish. Okay, so you guys got the song together, right? You got to actually package it to be released as a single, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm using the right word.
Yeah, that's it.
You guys
are
looking at me.
Yeah. No, that's it.
But you also got to lead our congregations, both in Spanish and English, in singing this song. Let's mm-hmm. talk about that a little bit. How was that?
I mean, I teared up the first, because the first day we shared it here, I think it was like the second time through the chorus, people were already singing along.
Yes.
And you can't plan that. You can't predict that. And so I'm trying to like sing back up and I'm like, I'm like, I can't believe this. But it was really special because it was something that our team did. We did it for our church, and to see the people in our church grab onto it that fast, that was really special, because that doesn't happen.
Right. Well, and that's the mark of a good song, right? A good worship song is that it's singable.
Yeah.
Is that people, it's a melody that people can grab onto quick enough that they could sing it. And that's incredible. I mean, kudos to you guys.
So that was my experience here for the English side of things. I think similar thing in Spanish.
Well, I'm trying to remember, and I can't remember. The only thing I remember, and this is quite a different experience than what you just talked about, I don't remember how the congregation reacted at all. I imagine it was good, because I don't remember a bad reaction.
I would probably remember that.
But what I do remember, so Will's the one that played the piano for the whole song. Oh. He's the one that made the piano arrangement. So now us performing it in Spanish for the first time live, that means I have to play the piano for it. And I didn't realize how hard it was going to be to play the piano and sing that song at the same time. So when we get to that bridge part, I'm just like, I think I messed it up every single time. That's what I remember the first few times.
So magical.
You were focused on getting it performed.
So magical. Do you hear how magical this whole songwriting and cheering process is?
You guys have done. I mean, you guys are professionals. You got to understand this. For us, those of us sitting in the congregation, we're just so in the moment. And that's what you want, right?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be about worshiping the Lord. So let's talk about, okay, so that was a year ago. All this happened a year ago. Christmas 2020 is when we first started singing as a congregation. Well, what has happened since then?
Well, we have kind of, you know, sat on it for a year now.
Sure. Well, nobody wanted to sing it in January.
Until it came back around again. But I think Jason's actually used it some, even not at Christmas. I think he used it for Easter, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Which I love that. I wish I would have thought of that idea. But fast forward, here we are now at this Christmas, and Will reached out to a friend that has some connections with multitracks, and he told them about, you know, our Christmas song.
Tell the novices what multitracks is.
Yeah, so there's a company called Multitrax that has a variety of resources for churches, but part of what they do is they provide like backing tracks for church worship teams so that you're able to supplement the music that you're hearing from the stage and the band with things that you wouldn't necessarily be able right. to recreate unless you had like 17 guitar players, 17 keyboard players.
And even smaller churches don't have near what we have
exactly.
here at Christ
that's
Fellowship.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So it's just, that's one of the resources they provide. But every week they feature a set of songs from fill in the blank churches and worship leaders. The guy who handles the publishing for this, he just reached out to them and said, "Hey, here's a Christmas song. What do you think about it?" And they said they loved it. And particularly there's multitracks.com and then there's the Spanish side of that, which is secuencias.com. I'm butchering that pronunciation.
No,
sorry.
You did great.
But they really loved it because they were like, there's really no good Spanish Christmas worship song. So that's been a featured song on secuencias.com for the last couple of weeks. And this week they're featuring it on the English side of that, which is multitracks.com, which is very, very cool for me because they just chose to select that. I mean, it was like submitted to them amongst the thousands upon thousands that they get. Mm-hmm. So that was very cool that they saw the collective work and really liked it and wanted to share it that much. So that really meant a lot to me.
And listen, Multitracks is a tool that all worship leaders use nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's almost our crutch now, right? Because you don't have to have a drummer show up because Multitracks can help you if the drummer decides, you know, whatever.
Well, it's really cool because think about those little churches that don't have, don't have.
And they have one guy who's like the worship guy and like he can't arrange charts.
Yeah. Listen, let me tell you a story. When I was, you know, back 18, my dad had started a church and I think we were 30 people. I was the only musician at the church. And so I had my keyboard divided. Half the left half was a bass and the right half was like a piano. And if I hit the bass hard enough, I could get a slap sound out of it, you know? So basically I played bass and piano with my two hands. And then I had this drum machine on the side, on my right side. So I would program this drum machine so it would flow with me. Cause you know, back in the old days, you didn't have the song arrangement where you did it beginning to end. You just kind of flowed and see what happened. And if you wanted to repeat the chorus, you did it. So I had the drum machine where I could push certain buttons and it would go with me. Well, sometimes I would start the slow song and, you know, it'd be really slow and everybody had their eyes closed and their hands up and very reverent. And I wanted to go to the next level of intensity and I hit the wrong button. And that drum machine would go, poof, tick-a-pick-a-poo, tick-a-pick-a-poo. It's like everybody start opening their eyes like, what is happening? So, you know, I would have really loved something like Multitracks back in that day.
Yes, that would have been a gift.
Yeah. It's kind of every worship leader's dream.
Yes. Yeah. That's fantastic. Okay, well, so we've heard a little bit about the, you know, the production side. Well, what about this song, kind of wrapping it back up, wrapping it around to the words of this song? Because I think what's really important with a Christmas song is it's easy to get trite at Christmas. It's easy to get sort of fluffy and, you know, and this song has such depth to it. I think that really encourages people to worship. So what do you guys hope when our people sing this song or when people all around the country and the world sing this song, what do you hope they get from it?
I think it's kind of a reminder of where we are this season, Christmas, and as we're going into our Christmas Eve services, you know, there's this theme of God, baby, Savior, you know, the God of the universe who also came as a baby, but then there was this path that was leading to a very cruel death that would bring us all to salvation. So it's God, baby, Savior, and I know there's this Emmanuel victorious, but you know, the beginning of that, what's the story? Mm-hmm. So it really tells that story. And then it takes us to this point where, man, we're just celebrating God for who he is, the risen King, the Savior of the world, who just, you know, in his humanity, he chose to die for us. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's just, why would we not want to tell that story?
Yes.
I think too, just to kind of add on is just the power of knowing that God sees me and hears me. And he, not only that, as he went one step further, he's with me.
Yes.
You know, every day he's accessible. Yes. And so for me, the accessibility of God and what he did and the victory that he achieved through the cross and his resurrection, now knowing he lives inside of me and he's accessible to me every day, is very powerful for me, because I didn't grow up in church and I didn't understand, you know, that concept. I thought he was very far away, untouchable. He's so holy. I don't dare not approach. All I do, I really felt like all I did in my daily life, because of the way I lived my life back before Jesus, my BC days, I just thought, there is no way that this God could love someone like me. I am a rule breaker every day. But then when I heard the actual gospel for the first time and realized that he loved me, it changed everything for me. So that celebration of this season and that time of him drawing near to us is just so moving for me.
Yeah.
I think for me, what Belinda said earlier is absolutely spot on, that, you know, to, and actually what Jason was saying too, where, you know, working with him for a while now, I don't speak Spanish, but I completely understand the value of not, you know, the direct translation and making sure things are done accurately. And this was really a song written for our church. Like, it really was. It's great that other people are using it, and it's great that it's getting, you know, more noticeability and stuff, but this was written for like our church and who we are, one church, two languages. And to see that kind of come together and, you know, kind of where we are now, that's super meaningful for me. But, you know, we didn't set out to, you know, do anything beyond just writing a song for our church, and like having it actively written in both languages is powerful. And I think it's also safe to say that that's rare too.
Yeah.
That doesn't always happen. So that the uniqueness of it and the specialness of it for our church is that's what's really meaningful and impactful for me.
Well, and I think people, not everyone is experiencing a lot of victory at Christmas.
Yeah.
I mean, some of us are doing fine, but a lot of people are not. And so to have that message of that not only God is with us, but he is ultimately going to be victorious over all sin, evil, and death is a message that I think we all find hope in. And that's what we want to give people at Christmas. Well, I'm blown away by the talent in this room. I am so impressed with you guys. Thank you guys for coming and sharing the story of Emmanuel Victorious. And now I'm going to play it.
Thank you,
all right.
Lisa.
Merry Thanks, Christmas, Lisa. Everybody.
Is born a father's gift, his only son, the spotless lamb we waited for, the savior of the world. Behold the Victorious. glorious, O majesty, our warrior, our Prince of Peace, the one who was and is to come forevermore, is here with us. Glorioso Rey, Su Majestad, oh vencedor.
vencedor, el rey de paz, el Dios que fue, es y será por siempre Él. Aquí está, glorioso Rey, su majestad, oh vencedor, el Rey de paz, el Dios que fue.